My name is Aaron.
Hi, I'm Andrew.
I'm Jonathan.
And I'm Lord Rupert Everton, shipping merchant who raises fancy dogs.
So I was saying in one of our like episodes before the episode where I had about like 4 or 5 songs that I was like wrestling with to try and figure out which one was going to be the song for this episode. And they were all like the things that I love about songs. Like it had an emotion. It was edgy. There was a conviction and clarity. They were all very dark songs. and I was talking to Rachel about it because I was trying to figure out how to actually narrow down which one I was going to go with. And her advice, which kind of sums up the core of this song, was what is it that you're trying to accomplish in the song that you're picking? Because if you want to have like an edgy out there, dark, moody conversation, then choose one of your songs. But otherwise, then go down that road. But otherwise, choose something that people will actually enjoy. And so we made the joke that's my response to that is what would I do without you? Which is that is the title of the song we're talking about today. What Would I Do Without You by Drew Holcomb. So I was first introduced to this band by Rob about 2 years ago. And one of the songs that I really liked out of the gate from him was California. And then the Morning Song, he has one called The Morning Song, which is really good. But one of the things that I found, like, because I didn't end up sticking with him past those two. And I think part of it is he has a very moody and dejected style of looking at the world, which I love. but the problem, especially with songs like California, is the music is like so upbeat. And I don't think his voice works with the song. Like, I think he wrote a song that someone else should have sung. Versus this song is, I think, the perfect marriage of like his general disposition with lyrics and music that match it. Just like right out of the gate when I first heard it, the way that the song opens is one of my favorite lines ever. It's the, sometimes I wake up with a sadness, other days it feels like madness. What would I do without you? I've been exploring a lot, like, is that something that is kind of healthy? I think no matter what, it feels relatable to me because there definitely are days where I'll wake up and it's like, I don't know if what I'm feeling is sadness or madness. And then there are other days where it's like totally normal, but it's also the recognition of being like vulnerable with someone else in that place where he's recognizing that he's the unpredictability of his mood is not something that's very easy to be with long term. And he has that kind of a moment of gratitude. And the whole song kind of mirrors that. I feel like he goes through so many layers, like amidst the questions and the worries, a peace of mind always takes me by surprise, which in my experience, like that's true. I think no matter how crazy a day is, it's like that bit that I always have Rachel is like in the back of my mind. It doesn't go away based on what's going on in the day. Or even the idea of like spending a decade with someone, the amount of life that moves through you within a decade. And by the end of it, you still have an approachable kindness in your eyes. Like that's something even just emblematically I'd love to say about like myself over time, but that's always true. I think also the difference between what I've said and done, but you're still standing by my side. Like that, there was a moment early in my relationship with Rachel where I have both of our cats at my place. And that means two litter boxes. And I decided right out of day one that I was going to be like on it with the litter box. And week after week, I kept forgetting. And whenever she was there, she'd be like, hey, could you maybe like next time you think about it, can you like take the litter out? And eventually realizing the amount of times that I had said yes was more than the amount of times I'd actually done it. but it's because like even for being a three, like a three on the Enneagram, my whole disposition is love is earned and you are loved because you are accomplishing and achieving something. And that's been a really hard thing. And I imagine it's going to continue to be a hard thing for me to shake. But like that lyric kind of captures the tension of that idea. There's a ton of other ones. I think this song is special to me for that sense. There's a lot of, I think, vulnerability in the words and, going full circle on how I kind of started. That was what I decided I wanted to be. My contribution to this is that, as edgy and dark and soulful as the songs I was going to share are, something about this feels more vulnerable than those darker or moodier songs. Hmm. And I think that's the spirit of this song, and I wanted to do that justice. So, I'd love to hear what y'all think of it, what your take was.
It does seem really honest to me. I think it's interesting that the two options are I wake up with sadness or madness. Like that's the range of possible emotions. And so it's a good thing that he has somebody who doesn't see the world in that way to balance out his understanding of the world. And the whole song is a song of contrasts. It's, you know, you have this, I have this, you are this, I am this. And so kind of describing those differences that create balance in the relationship, I think is compelling. Because in a sense to where like if you get to like super edgy music where they're like, sometimes I wake up with sadness and sometimes it feels like madness. And I don't know why everyone else in the world doesn't see it the same way, because that's the way it really is. Like that's kind of immature at a certain level. So this feels like a much more, like you said, soulful, more mature song.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. I love how, and like you were saying, I think Andrew, like I love the realness. He's just so, he's just brutally honest, I feel like, about himself and his struggles. And like, there's just I love the authenticity there. He's not trying to be anything he's not. And that reciprocatedness, because it's really a love song, I feel like, knowing that the response to that is like unconditional love. Mm-hmm. I think that's what really makes the song beautiful lyrically, is, you know, his whole, you know, like the, all you're hearing is the call, but to me, it's the response that's the most beautiful, mm-hmm. you know, because mm-hmm. he's saying, what would I do without you? What would I do without you? And you know, the response to that is like, you know,
you're never going to have to figure out.
You never need to know, you know?
Yeah.
Or it's so clear. It never
if the response was, you about to find out, sucker. I mean, that would be terrible, but thankfully that's not what the answer is, you know? I think that's beautiful. I think it makes it a song to be treasured.
Mm-hmm. I mean, I fell in love with it, pretty quickly, after the first time hearing it. I listened to it and I was like, wow, that was really impactful. And I showed it to Lisette and she was like in tears. She loved it so much. Like she really, it really impacted her. And I think, the line that hit me the hardest was probably the third paragraph there, where it says, a decade goes by without a warning. and there's still kindness in your eyes. And that hit me just because we just hit 9 years of marriage. So we're about at a decade, although I've actually known her for a decade. And it's like, it does feel like it's gone by so fast, but there's still a kindness in her eyes. Like there's still, you know, that love we have, and there enough has gone by now where it's like, man, you know, I've woken up with my share of sadness and madness in various ways. And it's like, she's still here, you know, and she's still, incredible. And yeah, so that one really hit me hard.
Yeah. One of the things that I really like about the, towards the end of the song, he goes through that kind of contrasting list. You got the morning, I got midnight. You're patient, I'm always on time. What's funny is like, even that list almost corresponds directly to, Rachel and I, with the exception of midnight and morning. I'm the morning person. But I have the rain clouds. She has the sunshine. We both are on time, but, that part, we are both, perfectly on time all the time. I think I have a soft spot for any song that mentions like rain and midnight as well. I think those are like,
yeah,
it still has a little bit of that moody bit. Have y'all ever heard of Jason Isbell before?
Mm-mm. Oh yeah.
So I think Jonathan, I showed you one of his ones a while ago. He reminds me of Drew Holcomb reminds me of Jason Isbell a lot. But one of the negatives I had of this song was, where both of them are amazing songwriters, I think the music in this song is more produced and expected than Jason Isbell's music. So I kind of like, I'd love it if one day they did like a tour together and like he sang the song while Jason Isbell came up with some like composition of music to go with it.
You know, it's interesting to hear your thoughts too, like on just Drew Holcomb generally, like,
yeah.
Stuff that I've heard, I do think like stuff that I've heard from him, hope he's not listening. I really like him. So sometimes I kind of wonder if he's not like, maybe trying a little too hard, to be something that he's not. And
I think,
and some of it might be too, just like there's a level of just like experimentation and like, what if we tried this? Like, you know, which I've seen, and so I think this, I think stylistically though, I do think like stylistically, like this song is, I mean, it's really, I think it's very well produced.
Yeah.
But I think it's interesting that kind of your comment on like, it almost sounds like you want the authenticity of the lyrics to match the authenticity of the music.
Exactly. Yeah. Or
the arrangement. And you don't see that as much, which I understand. Well, I wonder if like a live version of this would do that. Cause I've seen that even with like a Ben Folds, you know, where it's like his live raw, like I almost just want to hear Drew doing just him and a guitar singing this, you know?
Well, cause it feels like the wording is so like in the moment, it's a stream of consciousness. That's all the associations and it feels unfiltered, but the music feels very filtered.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I can speak to that. I mean, just like from the limited music stuff that I've done, like it's very easy when you're in the studio to want to make something polished and produced and like, ooh, we could add this sound here, or, you know, this stuff. And you kind of let that get away from like the actual, like what does the song really want?
And also, when you're in the studio, you have critical listening equipment. Just the technical equipment is such that any little mistake you can hear, and it's that way on purpose, so you can hear mistakes, and it's possible to make highly polished music. But at a certain level, if you want something that is more from the heart, at some point you have to kind of override that impulse to make the thing perfect, even though you can hear the imperfections all over it.
To me, like, the perfect example of that is that Ben Folds live album. Mm-hmm. Even like the Luckiest, like the way that he does that in the live version versus the produced version, there's just like a rawness to it when it's live that just like it brings a depth and emotion to the song that it's just really hard to get otherwise. And I think I'm with you, Aaron. I think a song like this, like, I love the arrangement and it's super fun to listen to, but I think I would enjoy it even more, I think, in a, like, hearing him just, you know, belt it out at a live show with just him and a guitar, you know?
Yeah.
If you guys ever listen to the Raconteurs, they have a song like that, Level. The audio track to the music video is the live recording from some warehouse in Nashville with like 200 people crammed in there, and the energy is through the roof. And that's the one I heard first. And then I listened to the album and Level came on, and it was so disappointing. It was just like
really
such a letdown because the energy is just not there.
Now I totally want to listen to it. I even felt that with what was the Wolfpack song.
Yeah.
Andrew.
With the bass line.
Yes.
What is that one called?
Come on. You know the one I'm talking
1612
about.
1612 or?
No.
Dean Town.
Yeah, that's it.
Yeah.
It was all Dean Town. Same thing. I'd never heard Wolfpack before, ever. Until you sent me that YouTube video, and then I was like, this is amazing. Oh, so, and then I listened to the album and I was like, it's good.
the top comment on that video is as per tradition, the entire audience sings along with the lyrics of Dean Town because they're all like doing the bass line at the top of their voice at the beginning. It's pretty great.
It's amazing.
Oh, that's so good.
One song like that I think kind of captures what I feel like this could be. I don't know much by them other than this one, they're kind of a meme, I think, but Just Breathe by Pearl Jam.
Oh yeah.
Pearl Jam,
which like he's famous, I feel like, for no one understands what he's saying ever. Like his, the parts where he just goes on vocal, like, improv sessions while he's playing. But I think that's what makes Just Breathe so powerful, is he is he's so feeling the lyrics that he's singing that it's almost blurring his words, and the music feels like someone's just holding a mic up to him. Mm-hmm. And I think that's kind of what would I do without you, like a version of this song like that. Mm. It'd be so cool.
The whole grunge movement in Seattle in the 90s was a reaction against the highly polished and produced kind of stadium rock of the late 80s, early 90s. And so that authenticity was the thing, the primary thing. And you really see that come through with Pearl Jam and Nirvana.
Mm. Yeah.
Mitski. That's the thing that I feel with Mitski too. And yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
You know, you were talking about the contrast, You Are Patient, I'm Always On Time. And he does a couple of contrasts there, but in every single one, and really the theme of the whole song is like, I'm terrible and you're amazing. Like all my attributes are bad and all your attributes are good. And yet he gives himself the one attribute, I'm always on time, which we think of classically as a good thing. I mean, and punctuality is a good thing. But I wonder if there's something more there where he's like, you're patient, I'm always on time. In every other context of the rest of the song, that if you paint it in that light, he's saying it in a bad way, where it's like, I wonder if it's kind of like, yes, I'm always on time, but at what cost?
Yeah. How I interpret that is, and I think this is true for people that are chronically on time, is there so much anxiety tied up in that? Like being on time and that being like really important to you, because you, there's just so much you can't control, like traffic, weather. And so you're fighting against all that you can't control to try and create an outcome that makes it look like you have a lot of your stuff together. That actually is kind of the tie into my second more open-ended question, which is one of the things that is defining about this song is how self-deprecating it is. And I kind of wanted to put it out there to hear y'all's thoughts on that, because I think it's very cultural that guys will often kind of be self-deprecating about themselves. And a lot of it is genuine. I think they probably recognize where they have room for growth. But I also think it's, it can be pretty unhealthy. And it also encourages a posture of relationship that I think isn't comfortable for the guy or the girl. Because I feel like the her in this relationship probably thinks it's sweet how much he loves and needs and relies on her. But also I think she probably wants someone that like generally is like not putting themselves down all the time. So like, and I think some of it is even like in Christian circles or conservative circles or evangelical, like that's a posturing that happens all the time.
It does.
And I don't know if people realize, like, I heard there was a female comedian I watched a while ago, and she was like, I don't like it when guys do that, because it's like, we decided we wanted to be in a relationship with you. And if all you do is say how awful of a person you are, it's like, you're kind of saying we're bad at making
you have trash taste.
Yeah. You have trash taste, which is like a really good point. Like there is a limit of like, at some point I think it slips a little bit away from him, and it just becomes kind of, and it also is a little bit of like, you kind of have the attention on yourself then. So there's like the tripart problem I have with that dynamic, but do y'all pick up on that too?
My reading of the song is it's not quite as self-judgmental. It seems like one way or another, he's at some level of peace with himself, but he knows that it's good to have a balancing force in his relationship. So the closest I would see to like a self-indictment would be the lyric, a guilty soul in a worried mind. I'll never make it if I'm on my own. But a lot of the other stuff, it seems like a perspective difference. Like the way that you see the world, sadness or madness, is a different perspective. And, you know, the world is sometimes a sad and a mad place. So, you know, occasionally that's the right way to look at the world. It's not right to have rose-colored glasses all the time. I think you could read the song as just codependence. Like, I could never make it without you. Like, that's literally one of the lyrics. And, you know, that's not a, Aaron, to your point, that's not really a healthy or sustainable way to go about a relationship. At the beginning of a strong relationship, a lasting one, you probably go through a phase like that. Relationships are strengthened by adversity. Oftentimes you'll go through an adversity where the only way you're going to make it out is dependence on each other. Ideally, you come out the other end having built capabilities such that either one of you could go on alone if you had to, but you are certainly better together. But I don't fault anyone for not making it to that point in their relationship, because that just takes time and experience. And if you want to write a song before you get to that point in your relationship, maybe you're writing the song about the time where you were going through a hard time and the only way to make it through was to depend on your significant other.
Yeah. And you know, that's kind of how I see it too. I don't see it as like, it could be read as a super self-deprecating, like I just suck terribly and I would just worthless without you. Mm-hmm. But I think it is a little bit more clear if it's viewed as like seasons, where there have been seasons in our marriage where I've kind of told the set, like, I've just thanked her for loving me. Like, just thank you for like being here and being an amazing wife during this like low point for me. But she said the same thing to me at different times. Mm-hmm. Where she just, things were not going well for her, and you know, and it was, you know, things were rough, and I was a rock for her, and that's all marriage is you both have bad times, bad seasons, and the other one's there to prop you up. Mm-hmm. And so then you can feel like in those seasons, I'm just a drag, and like I'm waking up every day sad. Like in general, overall, I'm not really a person that wakes up sad. I feel like I have a pretty positive outlook on life. I don't like wake up like, oh, today's going to suck. But I certainly have in seasons where I go through a period of like, I'm just down. And then, my amazing wife is there. But again, the reverse has been true. So I that's how it hits me, just having lived through those ups and downs over the years, is like, maybe he's just in one of those seasons and felt like he needed to get it out as a song. But if it is like, that's just how their relationship is all the time, he's just always down and she has to drag him out of that state, then yeah, that's not a healthy place to be. Mm-hmm. That's not a good relationship.
And like, good art is a mechanism for personal growth. So if he had to write this song, assuming it's autobiographical, if he had to write this song in order to figure out that he has some growth to do,
yes,
then yeah, awesome.
That's totally true.
Yeah, I was thinking the same idea too. Like, so many times songs are they're not written to show us this like comprehensive view of a relationship or an entire, you know, the entire view. It's like the song. I think really there's a lot of times where songs just kind of live in a moment. Mm-hmm. and the lyrics are just kind of capturing that. And I know with Sarah and, you know, with my wife and I, like there's so many times where I'm in that scenario, and there's other times when she's in that scenario where, you know, it kind of goes back and forth. So we've even said, like, you know, as it helps when we're not both there at the same time.
Yeah.
So we're one of us,
which, you know, happens.
Like, well, yeah, it happens, but you know, by and large, usually like one of us is like down in the dumps and the other one's up. And then another time where, and then a lot of times it's reversed. So
when I listen to it, that line kind of works in tandem with the "A Decade Goes By Without a Warning," where I see him as sitting within a 10-year relationship and writing a song like this. That might be where I'm kind of coming from with wondering the healthiness of it. But I also think there's a level where, like, I like the idea of art being a medium for personal growth. And I also like the idea of him just genuinely reflecting on this and then moving on to an equal weight relationship. Like moving back into a reflective, being there for her kind of position as well.
Are you guys familiar with the manic pixie dream girl trope?
Yeah.
No.
It's a storytelling trope where your main character is a sad, usually an introverted and conflicted young man. And he enters a relationship with this vivacious, magical, creative woman. And he learns life lessons through the relationship and learns that everything isn't sad all the time and that he can be a better person. In the end, it usually doesn't work out because she's so flighty. Anyway, so it's kind of a trope in TV and film. I think maybe like I don't want to say cynical, but an unflattering reading of this song might go along the lines of something like that. This is sad boy weeping into his acoustic guitar, but just so happy that he has this magical manic pixie dream girl that can pull him through his sadness. And
in the meantime, she's like, "Oh man, I can't wait to be done."
which is kind of like a child mother relationship. A
yes,
she's just kind of there to clean up all his messes. Yeah, he can't get a hold of himself.
Well, and as a mechanism, and as a mechanism for personal growth, and that's how the manic pixie dream girl trope works. The thing that I see as different about this song is he's not framing his significant other as just a mechanism for personal growth. He has a relationship with her and he's not going to quit it. And if anything, I read the song as the mechanism, like the art is the mechanism for growth. So to Aaron's point, like, it doesn't sound like the relationship is all that healthy. After a decade, you would probably want to, if this was the norm, you would probably want to do some work there. But I don't know. I read it as the song is doing the work. He's doing the work through the song.
I like that interpretation because I think he, like, the song is just so beautiful. I kind of want the it's maybe it's one of the few instances where I want the interpretation to be happy, like happier.
Sure.
Well done, Aaron.
Yeah, I'm growing.
You're rooting for the guy.
I am. Well, because I think that's the thing, is he does such a good job at making his perspective, like, so universal, which is, I think, part of maybe even it too is, and maybe this isn't true. Maybe I'm revealing more of myself in it, but I feel like so many guys have that experience of just, like, one of the ways to get love is you just kind of put yourself down in the process.
Mm-hmm.
And it doesn't need to be that way. And I think I like the idea of this being kind of his way of communicating that archetype, but then also a positive read could be that he's also, by processing it and putting it into a song, he's working it out of his system.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. The dumb, useless husband trope was alive and well throughout the past several generations.
Yeah.
And so I think that's finally, like, seemingly mostly, or not mostly, but it's waning fast among Gen Y and Gen Z people, where it's like, hey, that's not how it is. Like, or it doesn't have to be anyway. But I think that there's still a permeating sense in our culture that's like the husbands and the men are just sort of useless buffoons and the women hold it all together.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I think that can play in here, where it's like, as soon as you are the party in the relationship that is the downer, or is, you know, having that bad day, it's like, well, that's just 'cause I'm one of those dumb, useless guys. It's how, you know, it's kind of like a finality to it. That's just how life is.
Okay. So I just had a thought. Here's another thought, maybe another way to read it. So if you are the sort of person described in this song, you know, someone who can see the sadness clearly, who can see the madness clearly, who has, you know, who sees the world in shades of gray, who has questions and worry, feels lost, is midnight, is rigorous about being on time. Like, if it's that sort of person, that's a very, like, a highly conscientious person, someone who cares a lot for themselves and for other people. So imagine this situation. Maybe he had a conversation with his wife or his significant other last week, and she says something like, "You're always on top of everything. Sometimes I feel like I'm just a third wheel hanging around because you have everything under control and everything organized." Then his response is, "Oh no, you don't understand. I need you as much as you need me. Here's why."
That's like,
I like that.
There's an artist I love. He wrote a song called 25 in Barcelona, JP Sachs. And he, there's a song he does called The Few Things that it's all about him saying, like, I don't say I love you enough. And that may make you think that, like, you're not critical to who I am, but you're one of the few things that I'm sure of. Mm-hmm. One of the few things that I'd build my world on, like that kind of a tone to the song.
Y'all mentioned earlier how this whole song is a little bit try hard and a little bit like it's overproduced, but the lyrics are trying to be that raw feeling, but it doesn't quite come through. Just a side note on that. I feel like something that kind of backs up that try hard nature is the name of the band. I feel like Drew Holcomb and the Neighbors is the most that's my band in college band name ever. So that just kind of hit me when y'all said that.
Oh, y'all are giving him bad rap. He's good. I think it's a great sentiment. It might be self-deprecating. It might be, I don't know, overproduced, but I mean, I love the heart behind it. I really do, you know.
Yeah.
I think it's authentic. He may be authentically codependent, but I love him.
We'll be codependent together.
That's right. That's right.
That's the only way to be codependent. No, really, by definition, that's the only way to be.
That's the scene from like that old claymation of Santa Claus is coming to town.
Yeah.
Like, we'll be independent together.
Oh, man.
Well, any other final thoughts, or do y'all want to get into kind of the ranking?
My only other question is, what edgy song did you say no to say yes to this?
So,
yeah. Or do so we want to? Or should we? You surprise us with that? Be the next one? I don't know.
No. So I do think every one of these is going to be a song that we eventually cover.
Oh my goodness! Good. Yeah. So gives me time to prepare.
The worst offender, and I like desperately love these songs. So when I say worst offender, I say it with like a lot of gratitude for what the song has done for me.
What would you do without them?
Exactly. It was Going to Georgia is the name of you listened to that one, Andrew?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which I mean, is kind of along the same lines of this.
So what I love, like, it's by the Mountain Goats.
Goats?
Yeah, so it is. It's a song that captures like the breaking point of mental health. To make a hard tone shift, like it's a really powerful song.
Wow, I'm reading the lyrics right now.
I pulled up to your house and you pulled the gun out of my cold hands. What would I do without you?
I was gonna say, you want to talk about codependency and. I think, yeah, we've... Anyway, sorry, keep going.
The other one was Untitled by Matt Corby. That one...
Oh, I love Matt Corby.
Yeah, dude, this was close. And then the third was actually not as depressing, but it's more emotional. Open Your Eyes by Snow Patrol.
Snow Patrol, wow.
Yeah, that one, like those three together were, all three of them are kind of like anthems for me. And this would be like the fourth one.
I would love a remix of this song that says like, that would be like, what would I do without you? And then it does a cut to like Kermit the Frog saying like, you know, hanging out, and then go back to the song.
Sometimes I wake up with a sadness. Other days it feels like madness. Oh, what would I do without you?
All right. What would y'all, what do y'all think? What would you, let's do, help my brain. Let's do like 1 to 10, 10 being the best. I think we've been doing that the last few. That's like,
yeah,
I think that's good.
We ditched our wobble system, so
we could do codependencies. Worlds without you, number of worlds without you, one world without you to 10 worlds without you,
a multiverse without you,
a multiverse without you.
brand new from Marvel.
The loneliest multiverse. I think I would give this a 6.5. I think it's good. I think it's honest. I think it borders on treacly a little bit for me, like overly sentimental. But at the same time, like I've got moments where exaggerated sentimentality just feels spot on. So, you know, I'll certainly listen to this again when that mood hits.
Tonight.
Yeah. At 5:30. I've scheduled it.
Yeah. Yeah, I do have a hard time identifying. I think at a surface level, when I first heard it and when I showed it to Lisette, it was like, we just kind of feel that way about each other. Oh, what would I do without you? You're amazing. And then the deeper we dive into it, the less I'm able to identify with it. It's like, I don't know, like I'm usually not that bleak. But there are moments like we've talked about, and like Andrew was saying, like where there's seasons where it certainly feels that way. And so I can identify with it in that way. But I think I'd maybe give it a 5. What did you say, Andrew? I already forgot your number.
I said 6.5. I don't know if we're allowed to do 6. 7 if we're not allowed to do halves.
Oh, I don't care. I just forgot what you said. That's all. No, I think I'd say 5.
I'm going to be the contrarian here. Maybe it's the contrarian. I'm actually going to give this one a 7.5.
Ooh. Hey.
I'm pumping it. I'm bumping it up because I love... I actually really enjoy sometimes overproduced songs, and I actually it's a fun song to listen to. I can think of many road trips that I've been on where it's like you just kind of throw this on in the background. Like it's just got a good vibe to it. I like I said, I like the heart. I like the, you know, I like the message to a point, as long as we're not getting too nutso with it. Yeah, overall, like I really enjoy the arrangement and just like listening to it. I like the whole experience. So 7.5.
I'd probably put it at a 7.5. I think there is a level to where this song has formed a somewhat of an archetypal energy for the way that I view Rachel and I. And so for that, I don't think I could ever give it anything less than 7. I think if I doubted for a second that he wasn't being sincere, it would be a lot lower. But it feels like he wrote this song desperately, like wanting it to capture how he felt. And then that spirit translated into the music.
Sometimes I wake up with the sadness, other days it feels like madness. So what would I do without you? When colors turn to shades of gray with the weight of the world at the end of the day, what would I do without you? A decade goes by without a warning, and there's still a kindness in your eyes. Amidst the questions and the worry, a peace of mind always takes me by surprise. I feel like I'm walking with eyes as blind as a man without a lantern in a coal mine. What would I do without you? My imagination gets the best of me, and I'm trying to hide lost at sea. What would I do without you? The difference between what I've said and done, you're still standing by my side. A guilty soul and a worried mind, I will never make it if I'm on my own. got the morning, I got midnight. You are patient, I'm always on time. Oh, what would I do without you? You got your sunshine, I got rain clouds. You got hope, I got my doubts. So what would I do without you? Oh, what would I do without you? Oh, what would I do without you?